Concordia lifts its way to another national record. Softball starts to pick up the pace, and tennis teams begin their quest towards GPAC glory. We'll break it all down for you today on the 13th ever episode of Talking Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter here with Kai Ulbrich. Kai, how you doing?
Doing well, Cohen. A little bit busy this week. You know, it's kind of getting into crunch time for both the academic and athletic side.
I've been talking to people, and they say that dead week sometimes can be more stressful than the actual finals week, especially if you get like classes that are more writing intensive. This is when all the papers are due and the assignments are in. So yeah, it's rough out there.
Talk to some calc people too, who have tests and quizzes this week.
So brutal. Yeah. For them. That's gotta be against the Eighth Amendment rights. Yeah. Against like cruel and unusual punishment or something.
Sure. Above my pay grade to do calculus in dead week.
But something to take our minds off of our academic rigors has been athletics, meaningful athletics too. We're getting into that time of year. Softball has been picking it up recently. They've been winning a few games. How have they been doing?
Yeah, so I mean, we've been talking all year long. Whenever they have a rough spell of games, we've been saying, as long as they pick it up during the GPAC season, that's when it really matters.
Yep.
And they've done just that. So it's been a pretty defining week for them. They've gotten up to a winning GPAC record. So they were sitting at well below 500 all year long, and they just broke that and got above it. So they're sitting pretty well in the standings now. They've had 12 games since our last episode, so lots to cover. We can't really get into each game individually, but we'll give you some overall statistics, and we got some individual awards to go over as well. So in those 12 games, they've gotten 10 wins and just 2 losses.
That's the headline right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, very good for them. Their first series was against Jamestown, and I was actually at that first game, the soccer team. We showed up to support them at that one. Crazy game.
Yeah.
So pretty slow first 3 innings. We had 1 run, but then things really picked up in the 4th inning where we got the bases loaded, and then Julia Van Wey, she came up and hit a single out to right field that brought home 2 runners to give us a pretty big lead. We brought it up to 4 in later in the inning,
yep.
And then we held them to 3 runs in the final few innings to get the win. Van Wey was actually given GPAC Player of the Week for the week of those games, because they won the first one against Jamestown pretty tight, 4-3.
Yeah.
And then they won the second one. I believe we ended it in 5 innings. So it was a pretty big win in that one. So then we moved on to Senior Day. The very next day, played another series against Dakota Wesleyan. Great 2 wins against them. We swept them just like we swept Jamestown. So great to do that on Senior Night. Then we split a series against the College of St. Mary. So we ended up getting a 10-5 win in the first game and then a 9-5 loss. So that was the first loss of the 12 games. There's one more coming up. But then after that, we went to Briar Cliff and got 2 6-3 wins. So we went 6-3 in both of them. And then we went to South Dakota, got 2 very big wins against Mount Marty, a 14-5 win and then a 6-0 win. So as you can see, it's been pretty good for the pitching staff, the defense. Not letting in a ton of runs has been really helpful.
A lot of low numbers there.
Yes, and the offense has been picking it up a lot. And we'll talk about one of the key players in just a little bit. The most recent set of games for the softball team was against Morningside. They split that series. They got a 5-0 win in the first one and then a 2-0 loss in the second one. Like I said, Julia Van Wey got GPAC Player of the Week for April 16th. But then the very next week, Kylie Schottenkirk got GPAC Player of the Week and, even more notably, National Player of the Week. So all of the NAIA, she was the Player of the Week. They give 2 players of the Week, a pitching and other fielding. So
that
she got
sense.
The fielding Player of the Week.
Gotcha.
So the last 6 games, so this is what she was given her...
The last week.
Yep, her honors for. Last 6 games, she's batting .737.
Okay.
So that's 14 out of 19 at-bats she's getting on base, getting a hit. Those include 4 home runs, one of which was a grand slam against Mount Marty, and then she has 13 RBIs in 6 games.
Those are good T-ball numbers.
Yeah.
And then you got to factor in the fact that they're throwing it to you.
Yep. And there's a defense that can throw the ball as well.
Despite what the numbers may say, they were playing defense.
Yes. So absolutely great week and, you know, last 2 weeks for Schottenkirk and the rest of the team. I know it's been good for baseball. Let's talk about that a little more, because I know they had 2 pretty rough losses
Yeah. No. So we last time we talked was the first two games of the Morningside series, and that was those were the huge games where Joey Gabranski obviously got his record. He got to 78 home runs, that huge plateau that he was been striving for ever since his freshman year. Aside from that, it was kind of an ugly series. You dropped the last three games of that series, and that actually affects our rankings. We come back and. So far, those three losses have been the only three losses since our last episode, but they dropped us from number 15 in the nation to number 19. So we did see, and obviously those being GPAC losses, those hurt a little bit more.
Right.
But right now, baseball's 33-12, 17-7 in the GPAC, and we're still sitting at second. So we're still doing good, and a lot of that is due to the most recent series that we had. We were able to keep up with the rest of the GPAC despite the Morningside series. But before getting on to the Hastings series, because of the record break, obviously, for Joey Gabranski becoming, again, having the most home runs out of anybody ever in the career at the NAIA level, Joey Gabranski obviously had to get that Player of the Week. More humble numbers than what we've seen from, like, Jaden Quinn earlier in the season when it came to his Player of the Week. Joey was 5 for 15, 3 home runs, 9 RBIs, which obviously that's amazing, but one of those 3 home runs is, you know, NAIA history, so you kind of got to give it to him. Mm-hmm. This is actually Gabranski's first of the year and his fourth of the career, and it was the fourth Bulldog to get Player of the Week. We had 3 from Jaden Quinn earlier.
Okay, yeah.
So we go on. We play Hastings in Plum Creek, so we're back in Seward April 21st. We have a great sweep there. This was huge. This was blowing up all over my Twitter timeline when I was seeing all this because we had an offensive explosion. It was a 5-16 win for game one.
Oh my god!
And then a 16-0 win.
Whoa!
So for those keeping score at home, that's 32-5 in two games.
Pretty lopsided. There.
Pretty lopsided. Some notable players: Tanner Tompkins, 2-for-3 with a walk, a home run, 3 RBIs. Jay Adams, 3-for-5, a double, 3 RBIs. Jaden Quinn, 3-for-6, a double, and 3 RBIs as well. And then Joey Gabranski. So we're talking about his last Player of the Week, and you kind of got to give him the Player of the Week just because of the historical nature of one of the 3 home runs that he hit. However, this one he took. This one outright, he stole this Player of the Week. Nobody was coming close to him. So this is 2 Players of the Week back-to-back for Joey Gabranski. Well, how did he do it? Well, he went out there. We're talking about T-ball numbers. 7-for-8, so only one at-bat. He didn't reach base. 5 runs, 2 doubles, 3 home runs, 12 RBIs. This is in a 2-game span, and he has 18 total bases. So got to give him the Player of the Week there. I think those numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Pitching, we didn't do bad either. Christian Gutierrez, who's kind of been the workhorse of this team, we've said his name a lot on this podcast. He's the guy that goes out there and gives you length. 7 innings pitched, that's exactly what he did again. This was in game 2. 4 hits allowed, 7 strikeouts, and he went 76 pitches, so super efficient. Collectively, though, the offense was the big story, 23 hits and 11 walks. We brought that momentum into Jamestown. Jamestown the very next day, so this kind of sucked. Hastings, we played in Seward at Plum Creek. The very next day on Sunday, we drive up to Jamestown, which, if you're an athlete or if you're even familiar with American geography, you know how brutal that is.
Yeah.
It's like a 6-hour trek. And again, game on Saturday, game on Sunday, 6-hour drive in between. Oof. Didn't matter, though. We swept Jamestown at Jamestown. Game 1 was a 4-1 win. Game 2 was a 6-3 win. The thing that was tricky with this, though, is for both us and Jamestown, this was our fourth game, especially game 2, was our fourth game in 2 days. So you start getting into the bullpen, you start using a lot of your starting pitchers, especially when you got guys like Christian Gutierrez who go out there and they give you 7 innings of work. A lot of times you're going to have to rest them later on. So that second game, we ended up having to use 6 pitchers, and it was kind of close. In the ninth inning, this is the 6-3 game. In the ninth inning, it was tied at 3. We go ahead, we hit a double. That's Ty Nikolajczak. He hits a double, which is the go-ahead run. It's 3-4. We get the bases loaded, and then Brad Holick hits a 2-run single for some added padding. We win the game, put up a 0 in the bottom of the ninth, and are able to get that win. So, just looking at it in totality, obviously, you're going to start talking about some of the team MVPs. It's getting that time of year. Who has contributed the most? Christian Gutierrez has got to be up there for one of your pitchers. Jaden Quinn was kind of running away with it earlier in the season. If you remember, he had those three GPAC Player of the Weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Gabranski's putting together a little resume of his own. We talked about his junior year was huge for him in terms of the career home run numbers because he put up 24,
yep,
which was insane. He's already got 20. Season's not over yet. And his triple slash is 389, 492, and 859 for that slugging. And he's definitely in the upper echelon of NAI when it comes to home runs and RBIs. So when we need hits, he hits the ball well.
Sure.
Next time out, April 26 against Mount Marty. This will be in Seward at Plum Creek. Game one of the doubleheader starts at 12 o'clock, and then the next game, no really set time depending on how game one goes, but it'll probably be around, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock. So just stay there at Plum Creek. You'll get seven innings and then seven innings. And again, huge GPAC opponent looking to finish strong from the Bulldogs down the stretch.
Yeah, it should be a nice day out too. So if you need a
yep.
little relaxation from dead week, go out to the ballpark, enjoy some Bulldog baseball.
Yeah, get some popcorn, get some peanuts, unwind a little bit, kick your feet up, and maybe watch Joey Gabranski put over like 15 RBIs.
Yeah, extend that record a little bit.
Yeah, so a little bit relaxing and a little bit exciting. But talking about GPAC, obviously baseball, softball, they're getting into it. But we got the tennis teams are getting into the GPAC too. They're starting to get their hands dirty a bit. How have they been doing?
Yeah, so they're getting into the tournament today and tomorrow, and they both have had pretty solid weeks. So men's tennis and women's tennis both had three games since our last episode. They both had two wins and one loss, so a good positive record for them. Talking about the men's side, on April 13th, their first win was against Wartburg College. It was a 4-3 victory. So if you remember, you basically have three doubles games going on at once. Whoever wins the most out of those gets one doubles point.
Yep.
And then your six competitors all play against the other team's six.
Mm-hmm.
And each one's worth a point. So that brings you up to seven total.
Singles mean more.
Yes. So we won the first one 4-3 against Wartburg. Then our loss was against Midland. So not great to get the GPAC loss. But it was a 5-2 loss on April 16th. So we lost the doubles point. And then Manuel Rodriguez and Hugo Fuentes won their singles matches. And I was actually it was in the field house. So
okay.
I watched Hugo's match, and there was a little bit of trash talk going on between
yeah.
the two. There was actually a pretty decent home crowd there. So there was
okay.
a little bit of heckling. But Hugo won his match. It was a pretty tight one. And the Midland guy, he started smashing his racket on the ground.
Did he break it?
The thing was destroyed at the end.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like, beat him physically and mentally. He kind of owns that guy.
Yeah, completely killed him, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, racket gone. Apparently those things are, like, $200 too.
They don't look cheap.
Yeah, so that was pretty funny. I guess that's a highlight.
There's a good takeaway.
Yeah, for sure. but then moving on to an actual highlight was our win against Hastings on the 20th. So We almost swept that one. It was a 6-1 win. We did sweep the doubles, so all three of our teams got the win, and then we won all but one of the singles points. The next game is going to be the first round of the GPAC tournament, so this is crunch time for them.
Yep.
It's going to be up against Doan tomorrow in Sioux City. I believe everyone's going up to Sioux City for the GPAC
okay.
tournament. We lost 6-1 the last time we played Doan. So it's going to be big to see how we've improved since then, because we have.
Yeah.
We've definitely, our record has been getting better. We've been improving since the last time we played Doan, so it's going to be time to see it in action.
Let's collect a few more broken rackets.
100%. Yeah, moving on to the women's side. Like I said, they also had three games, went 2-1. They defeated College of St. Mary 5-2, so they swept the doubles in that one and then won. That'd be four of the singles matches. Just like the men, they ended up taking a loss to Midland. The women was a bit closer. It was 4-3.
Oof.
Yeah, so we lost the doubles point, and then Shakira Derman, Mariana Milano, and Alexa Richard, they all won their singles. And I'll come back to Shakira Derman in just a second, but we got to talk about the Hastings game. They beat Hastings 5-2, so we got the doubles point, and then we got four of the singles ones. So talking about Shakira Derman, Shakira got GPAC Player of the Week this week for
wow.
tennis. So yeah, solid performance
yeah.
from her, winning doubles matches, winning singles matches, just a pretty solid performance this week. And then they're actually playing in about an hour. So we're recording this at 10 o'clock.
On Thursday.
Yeah, they play at 11, so this would be the 25th. They're playing against Northwestern in their first round of GPAC. And they actually beat Northwestern, what would that be, 3 weeks ago on the 5th?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so they beat them 5-2 in their last one.
Okay.
So looking to repeat that. The women's tennis team has been keeping up their good form.
Yeah.
So no reason why we shouldn't go back and beat them again.
So we've got, this is crazy, but we've got player of the week in baseball, player of the week in softball, national player of the week in softball. We're getting a player of the week in tennis. Track and field, are we going to go clean sweep?
I think we are.
Let's give it the track and field details.
Yeah, so a name you guys are all very familiar with if you've been paying attention to track and field or listening to the podcast. Zach Zoner. It's almost getting old at this point. It's boring saying it.
Yeah.
But he gets GPAC Player of the Week for the week before the 17th of April. So that's his third one this season.
That's crazy.
We haven't even had that many weeks.
Yeah.
So, third time this season.
So that's the third time of the outdoor season.
Outdoor season.
Yeah, and that's only been like on for what?
It's only been like a month and a half.
Yeah, that's insane.
So what they do for track athletes of the week is they'll give you a track player of the week and then a field athlete
of
the week.
That makes
sense.
So
he's been getting the field athlete of the week so much. Feel bad for the other field athletes from the GPAC. Like, they just got no shot.
Yeah, it's been crazy.
Yeah, like, you're not going to beat him. But then, almost even more exciting, we got two athletes of the week this week.
Yep.
So they were given out yesterday. Matthew Boyer and Jenna Esch got, female track athlete of the week, and Boyer, stole the honors from Zach this week.
Yeah, right.
Getting the field player of the week, and actually more exciting than the player of the week is we've got a school record on our hands.
Yes, we do.
So Boyer, he set the Concordia school record in the javelin throw. So he threw 219 feet and 1 inches at the most recent meet. So he PR'd by 18 feet.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I was reporting on that meet. So he threw, so they measure it, I hate it, but they measure it in meters. So it's 66.78 meters, and that was the next, so he got first, obviously. He got gold in that event. The next farthest throw was 56.88 meters. So
he won by 30 feet.
He blew him out by 10 meters. And, you know, that got me curious. So going back, school record.
Yeah.
That's the farthest anyone's thrown a javelin in a Bulldog uniform, 219 feet. The previous record was set by Kevin Baker in 1986.
Whoa.
So this is a 38-year-old record. And even then, he kind of beat it handily.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Boyer, 66.78 meters. This guy in 1986, Kevin Baker, 62.6 meters. So that's a whole 4 meters.
Yeah, so when you convert that, it comes out to about 14 feet.
Yeah.
And another very exciting thing, it's actually the longest throw in Concordia history. So when you take shot put, throw, javelin, all the different throws, this new record actually beat the old record. It was in hammer throw, and he beat it by less than a foot, actually.
How about that?
Yeah, so he holds the longest throw in Concordia history.
And just a sophomore.
Yeah, so that's very exciting.
Yep.
Yeah. So then we actually had two meets since our last episode. We're going to do our best to, you know, cover all the notable things. Yeah, so we're just pull up the athletic.net, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Got top three, I'm going to talk about you. If not, sorry. There's too many good performances.
Get top three.
Yeah, maybe if you qualify for nationals or something.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to start off right away with the South Dakota Challenge. So that happened on April 13th, so about 2 weeks ago. Starting off, we've got the women's 100-meter hurdles. We've got Adriana Rodenkall getting third place in that with a 13.96. And then Kayla Svoboda with a 15.02 getting third. We'll talk about a fourth place. We've got Jenna Esch with fourth place in the 400. Obviously, she got an athlete of the week, so we'll shout her out here.
Yep.
Rodenkall got fourth place in the 400-meter hurdles. Then going on to the men's 3K steeplechase, we've got Nathan Pennekamp got third in that event with a 9:59.07. So great to see him breaking the 10 minutes in that 3K. Another name you're all familiar with, we've got Calvin Rode getting first place in the men's 5K, running a 15:25.66. Absolutely crazy from him. Coming in right behind him with a 15:46 in second place is freshman Trey Robertson. So great to see our freshmen stepping up big, getting some silverware there. Kaylin Freiberg, she got first place in the women's 5K with a 17:58.43. Then Matthew Boyer, we just talked about him, but him in the discus throw, he got a 47.03 meters, so that's about 154 feet, and that was a season best for him. Then we go to Chris Wren in the hammer throw for the men. He got first place with a 58.82 meter throw. Right behind him was a PR from Darian Semedo. He got second place with 56.43 meters. Men's javelin. So this was Boyer. This was his PR before he set the record.
Mm-hmm.
So he threw 201 feet 6 inches, so 61.42 meters. We'll talk about, obviously, we'll talk about his record in the next meet because he beats this one by 18.
Yeah.
Then we got the women's javelin. Gretchen Stottlemyre threw 39.12 meters to take the gold in that event. We'll talk about Haley Miles in the women's long jump. She took fourth place in that event, an outdoor season best for her. She actually got injured during indoor season.
Oh,
she set the indoor bulldog record for the long jump. It was a little over 19 feet.
Ooh,
so she,
okay.
Crazy number. She got injured, so she's still trying to work her way back. She jumped 17 feet 11 inches on the 13th, so that's getting back to where she's been. So excited to see if she can get back to that for nationals, because she was looking really competitive for that. Just to show you how competitive this meet was, Zach Zoner actually got fourth in the men's pole vault.
Wow.
Or vaulting 17 feet, so very good mark for him.
Yeah, not bad.
But there were some very competitive... There were lots of teams here, and not just NAIA teams. So we got some different divisions represented. Moving on to the men's shot put, Semedo, again, he got third place in that event with a 16.4-meter throw. Women's shot put, we got Abigail Gerber with a PR of 14.38 meters, taking second place. And then Cameron Picorni getting a season best of 13.34 meters for the third place. Men's triple jump, we got Jonah Paulson jumping 13.24 meters for the third place. And then we got the women's 4x1 relay. So they ended up taking second place with a 48.4. We have Saunders, Kirchner, Rhodes, and Rodenkahl in that event. So that's it for the South Dakota Challenge. Yep. Now moving on to the Jim Dutcher Classic. So this is the one that Esch and Boyer got their player or athlete of the week for.
Yep.
So we're going to start right off with the women's 100-meter hurdle finals. So we've got Isabella Salters getting first place with a 15.97, and then Landry Walter getting second place with a 16.4. The women's heptathlon 100-meter hurdles. We don't talk about heptathlon too much, but we'll shout them out here. Elena Battenhorst took second and with a 15.55, and then Josie Noble took third with a 15.6. Going on to the men's 110 hurdle finals, we've got Hayden Kluth took third place with a 15.88. Then women's 200 meters, we had Kayla Kirchner take third place with a 26.03. And then in the men's 400, we had a third place finisher, Liam Fagan, with a 51.72. And then here's the event that Esch got her athlete of the week for. Jenna Esch took first place in the women's 400 with a 55.8. And that's a national qualifying time, so great to see that. And then Kayla Kirchner came in third with a 58.72. Men's 400-meter hurdles, we had a third place, Tegan Meyer with a 57.42. And then in the women's 400 hurdles, we had Jordan Kopke with a 102.15. That was enough for the first place and national qualifying time. And then with a third place in that event, Isabella Salters with a 1 minute 7.16 second finish. Men's 800, we had Trevor Kunkel get second place with a 1:58.91. And then the women's 800, we had two top threes. We had Jenna Esch with a 2:18.21. And then in third place, we had Raya Kaczynski with a 2:21.2. The women's 1500, so pretty much 109 meters short of a mile, we had Kylan Freiberg with a 4:36.15, so crazy time from her. And then, just to show you how crazy it is, the second place finisher was a 5:03.81.
Yeah.
So beat second by maybe 27 seconds.
A good amount.
Yeah. And so both of the top two from Concordia. Men's 3K steeplechase, we had Wesley Detterman take third place with a 10:18.21. Women's 3K steeplechase, we had Hannah Bintema get first place with a 12 flat. Men's 5K, and we talked about Rode and Robertson just before, and they once again go 1 and 2. Rode with a 14:58.96, and Trey Robertson with a 15:21.29. And then rounding out the top three, we got Trevor Kunkel with a 15:23.26. And we actually, oh my gosh, we took the top 10 in that.
I did see that. I think we were the only ones entered.
Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Still great times. Like those
are really good times.
Those would be winning times even if they didn't.
Yeah.
Even if they had more competitors. But, I mean, I guess that's fun to
see. We swept the event.
Yeah, so we took 1 through 10 and then 12 and 13.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Again, then the women's 5K, we went 2, 3, and 4. So we had Ellie Jander with a 20:22, Josie Smith with a 20:26, and then Sammy Vajalsvec with a 20:29. The men's 10K. I don't know why you would run a 10K on a track. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
But Benjamin Ehrenberg decided he wanted to put himself through that pain and put himself through a 35:55, so a pretty solid time for him. So
not bad at all.
Over 6 miles.
Yeah.
So he's going under 6 minutes a mile for six of them. Men's discus, we had Austin Rizel with a second place finish with a 47.22 meter throw. Men's hammer throw, we had Connor Ash with a 53.17 meters, and then Austin Rizel with 51.43 meters throw to take second and third, respectively. Then in the javelin, that is Boyer's school record throw of 219 feet 1 inches, and that was, of course, enough to qualify him for nationals. Women's long jump, we had Kiki Nayonik, who jumped 17 feet 9.5 inches, taking first place. And then in third place, we had Miles. She jumped 17 feet 6 and 3 quarters inches. Men's pole vault, Zoner did not, he got a no height in this one, so don't know exactly if he didn't start or he just started too high and didn't get it. But we had Jax Jacobson take third place with a 13:05. Or 13 feet 5 inches, sorry. And then women's pole vault, we had Kayla Svoboda take third place with a 10 feet 8 inch vault. Men's shot put, we had Darian Semedo get the national qualifying mark and winning the meet with a 16.45 meter throw. Women's shot put, Abigail Gerber also got a national qualifying mark. She got first place with a 14:53 meters. And then the triple jump, Paulson once again on the podium. He got third place with a 13.59 meter jump. And then Haley Miles took fourth place in the women's triple jump, 34 feet 10 and a quarter inches. Breathe. So that is the...
That's all of them.
That is the track and field action from this week.
Yeah.
So that's all the sports that we usually talk about, but we had some...
We do have powerlifting.
...notable stuff from powerlifting.
We do have powerlifting.
Show them some love.
Also, for the future, we're going to try and tweak with the track and field format.
Yeah.
Just because it's a lot.
It's a
lot. I think what we'll do, once we get this all edited, once we get this edited, we'll put it in the description of Spotify.
Yes. So, yeah, another reason to listen on Spotify.
Yeah.
We'll be putting timestamps in the description to tell you what sport we're talking about at which times.
Yes.
So, obviously, we'd love for you to listen to the whole thing.
Yes.
Get the whole shebang.
But it's a lot of numbers.
But if, for whatever reason, you don't care about baseball, you can skip that section. If you don't want to listen to 15 minutes of track and field,
yeah,
we'll tell you when it starts and finishes.
A lot of numbers.
Yes, lots of numbers.
But for the last little tidbit that we have here, again, we don't usually cover it, but USA powerlifting, we have a really good powerlifting team here. Yeah. It's just they compete so erratically that, you know, it's not really worth an entire segment to itself. But just recently, we had the 2024 USA Powerlifting Collegiate National Championships in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I was doing a little research into this. This is all colleges. This isn't an NAIA deal. This is everybody give us your best shot.
We've got D1s, D2s, D3s.
We're gonna have a liftoff.
Yeah.
So our women's team, they got ninth out of 109 teams that competed.
All again, divisions.
109 yeah. colleges. And our men got 19th out of 110. So we'll just two highlights. One from the women is sophomore Riley Ladd. She broke the collegiate bench press record at her weight class, lifting 204 pounds. And again, you know, it's obviously not very polite to mention a woman's weight, but when your entire sport revolves around weight, I think we'll give it a pass here. Yeah. She only weighs 114 pounds, and she benched 204.
She's going almost double her weight. That's
yeah.
crazy.
And we were talking about this before. It's good to, like, double your – if your squat max is double your weight, that's really good.
Yeah.
But this is a double bench press.
I can only dream about doubling my weight bench press.
Yeah. And so she's got 204-pound bench, 292-pound squat, and 320-pound deadlift. Again, she weighs 114 pounds.
That's crazy. She's got almost three times her weight in deadlift.
Yeah. So in powerlifting, how they do that is they add the big three. Those are the big three. They add those together, and then you get one big weight total at the end. Obviously, they do it in kilograms, but nobody understands that, so I converted it to pounds. And because of her great total and largely thanks to her bench press record, she got second just
nice.
Out of the women in terms of that total. Our best performing man was Will Peterson. Will Peterson put up some crazy numbers of his own. He ended up getting fifth in the competition. 661-pound squat, 385-pound bench, and 645-pound deadlift.
That's
so
crazy.
When you look at the national records, when it was all said and done, Concordia University, our women finished ninth, squarely in between the University of Florida and the University of Pittsburgh. So again, big schools.
Pretty
here.
Big names there. Probably more than 1,200 students at those schools.
Easily. And then Concordia University, our men's team, we finished right underneath Georgia and Ohio State and right above Oklahoma State, Oregon, and the University of Texas.
Love to see that.
So we're doing pretty good. Shout out to our powerlifting team. They don't get enough love too often, but man, they are, again, contributing to the great culture of Concordia Athletics that we have
for sure.
across every sport.
See them in the weight room all the time. They're always grinding in there.
They're hitting it.
I see them every time I'm in there. I see the same people.
Yeah.
And I go at different times every day.
They are committed to their craft.
Yeah.
But that'll be all for the 13th ever episode of Talkin' Dogs. Be sure to stay tuned in the future for weekly podcasts on the CUNY SOAR website and Spotify. Tomorrow is finals week, but me and Kai are planning to do one more episode
yep.
tomorrow. But in the meantime, from Colin Carpenter and Kai Ulbrich and everyone at the SOAR newspaper, have a great day and go Dogs!